Good morning. Hi. This is April 24th, 2000, here in Natick, Massachusetts. This is part of the Morse Institute Library's continuing Veterans Oral History Project. And this morning we have with us Harold Aronson. Good morning, Harold.
Good morning.
I understand they call you Harry.
At times.
Can I call you Harry as we go through this?
Sure.
Okay. First thing I'd like to ask is, how old are you?
77.
77, and what is your current address?
50 Pilgrim Road, Natick.
You live here in Natick, and your marital status?
Yes, married.
Do you have children, Harry?
Yes, two.
And grandchildren?
Two.
Well, let's try for three. Do you have any great-grandchildren?
No.
Okay, and where were you born, Harry?
In Boston, Children's Hospital.
Okay, and where were you raised?
Revere.
In Revere?
Mm-hmm, Revere Beach.
And how long did you stay there?
20 years.
And can you tell us something about your dad and mom, your family life?
My dad was a printer, worked for the Ritz-Carlton Hotel. He did all their printing for them, all their suite cards and mailing lists and menus. And he passed away very young. He was 44 years old in 1942 from a blood clot. And my mother lived here quite a while after he was gone. Then she moved to California with my brother. And he passed away in 1973.
And when did you first come out to Natick?
1960.
Okay, what brought you out here from Revere?
Well, I didn't live in Revere before Natick. I lived in Brighton.
I see.
First, when I got married, I lived in Boston, in the West End. From Boston, I moved to Brighton, the Veterans Housing Project. Mm-hmm. And then from there, friends of ours had moved, and we looked in Natick, and we kind of liked what we saw. So we've been in the same house now almost 40 years.
Okay, so you moved out here in 60. So you moved out here after you had been in the service, is that
after,
correct?
Yes.
Okay. Can you tell us where you were in the early 1940s then?
Early 1940s, I worked in the Watertown Arsenal. I could have got deferred because of being working for the government, but all my friends were enlisting, so I enlisted in at that time was the United States Air Force. Mm-hmm. Now, I guess it's just the Army Air Force.
But what kind of work did you do in the arsenal while you were there?
I was a machinist there. I did the machine. We worked the machine shop and running various machines.
So you had skills that the armed forces would really want.
Mm-hmm,
now
yes.
Tell us about enlisting. You say your friends went in.
Most of my friends went to service, and I went in and on my own.
In Boston.
In Boston, at the time they were advertising that they wanted people to enlist and pick out your trade that you wanted and where you want to stay, but. I wanted to stay in the States, but they sent me over to England for 2.5 years.
But this was in 42?
In 42, December yeah. 42.
Okay, that's 1 year after Pearl Harbor you went into the service.
Right, correct.
Why did you pick that particular branch?
I don't know, somehow or other, I liked the Air Force, I liked the way they did things, and I also wanted to do mechanical work, airplane engine mechanic.
Did you have your choice of service you could go into?
Most likely I did. At the time of enlisting, they gave us a choice. But somehow the Air Force appealed to me, so I figured that was the thing to be in.
Okay, and when you went into the service, did you go in by yourself, or were some friends with you, or?
Well, I was drafted. I was enlisted, rather, from Fort Devens.
Yeah.
And I guess there were some others that had gone at the same time.
Guys that you knew?
Not my own friends, no.
No.
I only made acquaintance of them when I went in there.
Okay, so you're a Boston young man, you're saying goodbye to your family, and you're going into the armed forces.
Mm.
You were sent out to Fort Devens here in Massachusetts.
Right.
Tell us about that.
Went there for my basic training, and then they shipped me out of there once I got it over, I guess it was to New Jersey for selection. And then I went to Miami Beach.
Okay, one step at a time.
Yeah, right.
Tell us about basic training. What was that an eye-opener for you?
Well, somewhat. I mean, it's something different, you know, and I got to know the general rules of the, or whatever, of the Army and the Air Force.
This is in the middle of the winter. Was it tough being out there then?
Yeah, a little bit, but I didn't stay there too long before they sent me to other places.
Okay, now when you were at Devens, was it decided there that you would be a mechanic, or did you go to some schools first?
I had to go to school for it.
Okay, where did you go?
In Detroit, Michigan, Ford Aircraft Plant. In Detroit, or what was it, Dearborn, Michigan, mm-hmm. where they had the Ford Rotunda and they trained me on the radial engine to do mechanical work.
Who made those engines? Was the Pratt Whitney or?
I think it was Pratt Whitney. Studebaker made a radial engine at that time.
And
we were trained on the, to go, tell you how to handle them, what to do.
Tell us about that you go into this huge complex and they say you're going to work on engines. What specifically did you do? How do they teach you?
Well, they had a school to teach you how to use magnetos that came to the engine. They taught you how to use a Magnaflux machine that could detect minute cracks through the use of lead in the liquid that magnified all this, and they could tell if there was the engines were able to be saved or not. That's what I did most of the time that I wasn't trained for it. To know just to hone out piston cylinders and different types of work there that I could do.
Was this hard work?
It was kind of a little tough, of course, I was younger.
What were the hours in school?
I don't recall too much on the hours, but.
But you have a recollection of it was pretty hard work.
Well, it was tough to, you know, get, and I was younger, of course. I didn't mind it as much.
Yeah. Mm. And how long did you stay in Detroit? Excuse me, Dearborn.
About 5 months.
So this takes you up to maybe June of 43?
Yeah, June of 43, right. And then from there, they shipped me to England, to an Air Force base.
So you went right from school overseas, is that correct? Before you went overseas, did the Air Force take you aside and say you're going into a different culture? This is what you should know about how to behave or where you're going or what their customs are?
Right, they all.
Tell us about that.
That's what they showed. Of course, I don't recollect too much of it, but I know there was, they showed, you know, taught us what to do and how to handle ourselves and, you know, what. Where to be and how to dress and the usual things that you might know your Air Force people would know about.
How did you get to England?
The Queen Mary.
You sailed over?
On the Queen Mary.
Mm. With how many other guys?
Oh, there was 18,000 of us. They put quite a few of us in a stateroom that normally would take two people. There might have been about five or six or eight of us in a stateroom and slept in bunks or hammocks, whatever they had.
Yeah.
And it took 5 days to get to England.
Where did you sail from?
From, let's see, where it would be. I don't think it was from Boston. I think it was from probably New Jersey.
Maybe out of the port of Newark, something like
Somewhere
that.
From Newark or somewhere. Yeah. I don't recall too much where we departure from.
Okay, you're sailing overseas in wartime on a pretty big target. How did you feel on those 5 days?
Seasick. I always get seasick all the way.
Were you alone or in a convoy?
I guess they had convoys with us, but we were, you know, going by on our own, of course, and you know, things were different and new, and we didn't realize, you know, what we had.
Did you see any ships around you as you went over?
Occasionally there'd be a destroyer or something around.
How about aircraft protection?
Not too much. I didn't see too much of that.
And did you know where you were going?
I think they mentioned that we'd be heading to England.
Okay, where did you land over there?
I'm not sure exactly. I know it was we went to the Wharton Air Force Base. Wharton, England. That was a base I was at.
And now you are with the fellows you were with in school. You weren't all alone by yourself on that ship. Mm. You knew some of the fellows you were
Some
with.
Of them from school, right.
Can you tell us where Wharton is?
It's right in central England. I'm not sure if it's north or south. Or some section, one section of England. I'm not definitely sure. It was a long time ago.
And this is June in England, which is a lovely time to be there. What were your impressions of landing over there?
It was nice, but 95% of the time was rainy, damp, foggy.
Yes, really?
You walk around England, you could actually, when they said pea soup fog, they meant it, because the London fog is very thick and you could walk in the street and bump into people and not even know it.
Now you're on an air base?
Air base.
And you are immediately doing what you were trained to do.
Some of it,
to work on engines. Mm. Describe, can you, like a typical day of what you did over there?
Well, it was not always available to, you know, to have the work done, and only when the planes come in, we're supposed to inspect the engines, check how they were. People took certain parts of off. We'd have put in a honing machine, clean out the cylinders. We'd used to put the parts in, like I mentioned, the Magnaflux machine, certain parts, to see if there's any small, minute cracks. Mm-hmm. And we could tell just what it was doing there. And of course, when there wasn't anything doing, they'd give us other work, the driving, they would different other jobs they could put you on. And special services, which I did a lot over there as well.
What does that mean?
When I was in the entertainment department, I used to travel. It was another friend that I met, played the guitar, and I'm a harmonica player, and we traveled around England entertaining at different bases. We got no pay for it, but it was just a meal and just something to go around. So I did a lot of that over there as well.
How much did you do of that, other than your work as a mechanic?
Oh, at least 50%.
Really?
Mm.
Tell us how much traveling you did.
Oh, it's quite around, all over England. I went to London, Manchester, Norwich. I went to Northampton, Southampton, Coventry, which was the, of course, 3 years ago, the famous Lady Godiva did a famous horseback ride. And I was in there after the bombing. And of course, the troops had left then, and we went in a convoy. And we saw all the aftermath of devastation that was at the, was supposed to be the most bombed out town in England. And it was quite a experience for that alone. And then of course other times I was in the motor pool, and they, you know, if they had to fill in and do things, get things rolling, we'd just be stationed in the garage or whatever, and then they'd call us to do certain trips. And we'd be called, you know, to go all around Ipswich and all and take people to bases or hospitals and whatever.
When you worked on airplanes, I'd like to draw a distinction here. Did you have anything to do with the air crews themselves, or did you just work on planes?
Just on the planes itself.
So you had no idea who was flying them or
I never
who
was
would
up
be
in a plane.
Them.
I not only wasn't up one, I never got in a plane. It's always never, we put together some Piper Cub engines into the motor, and they wanted us to go up with them to try them. We wouldn't go. We didn't want to.
It's pretty small, yeah.
Yeah, small little plane. I said, we don't know, thanks. We didn't want to go.
What other planes did you work on?
B-24s, 56, B-26, the big bombers.
How about 17s?
Not that much, not too much in the pursuit planes, more the bombers. And we did some of that.
So you were, if you had 26s and 24s, you had big planes and medium planes.
Big radial engine planes, right.
How about any fighters, anything single engine?
Not too much, you know, no. Mostly the big bombers. And then we used to go in the room, we used to test the engine, and that noise would really deafen you. You could really ruin your, in fact, one of my ears got partial hearing loss because of being in the Air Force and whatever, and I got compensated for that. I still have the hearing loss, but this ear is a good one. So.
Let's put something together here. It's raining all the time and it's thick fog all the time. How did these guys fly?
They managed to get up. A lot of time it was just fog, mist, and they seemed to get up off the ground in enough time. They had enough clear weather to get in through it.
Now, was this an operational base where they would go off on bomb runs?
I imagine, yeah.
I think in your papers, I've got you were the 8th Air Force, 100th Bombardment Group. Mm-hmm. Is that the one you stayed in right. for your career in England?
Correct.
So you were working on planes that were taking off and going on bombing raids?
Bombing raids, right.
Do you have any idea where they went or so where the operational strikes were?
I never really got into that. I never, you know, followed their flight plans or whatever. I didn't have any idea.
In the old movies you see of the time you were over there, there's always these pictures of everybody scattered along a runway waiting for the planes to come back. Were you part of that vigil?
No, we weren't on that at all. We were just in the hangars whenever possible, and we'd work on the engines when they would brought one in. Otherwise, they'd take them off the plane. We wouldn't even, I don't think I ever saw the runway really much, because we were in a different section.
You were removed out over in the machine shops.
Right, we were just in when they brought them in, and we'd see just what we had to do to them.
Yeah. What was, I'm not sure how to phrase this, but what was the most common thing wrong with the planes that came to you, the engines?
Just the engine wear.
Just wear and tear, common
wear and tear of the engine.
Any time an airplane had been shot up?
Well, some of them had, but we didn't get that much to do with it.
Okay.
Because we weren't an airplane mechanic. It was an airplane engine mechanic. So we didn't have anything to do with the rest of the plane at all.
Okay. You mentioned Coventry and mentioned Southampton, of course. These places were pretty heavily bombed. Tell me about your impression seeing what was left of that cathedral there. Mm. Or the waterfront at Southampton. What did you feel about this?
Oh, it looked pretty devastating. It's something that, you know, you don't forget very easily. And it's, you know, just a mound and something you could see what they have there. But as far as seeing the bombing itself, we never saw any bombing. We saw aftermath of bombings.
Which is pretty impressive. Mm. Did you talk to the British people?
Oh, plenty.
Did you get to know any families over there?
Mm-hmm. I planted, and they invited me. There's a couple of families I met. They invited me for dinner, a rabbit or squirrel, whatever they were making, because they couldn't get too much regular meat. They had horse meat.
Tell us about going into a British home in Coventry.
I didn't go in a British home in Coventry. In England, I went into a British home. I met a girl there in town, and she invited me to her house for dinner. And, you know, and it was... they welcomed me and they gave me a nice dinner, and afterward they gave me a cup of tea afterward, and they wanted to put milk. I said no. I said, well, in the United States a lot of people don't drink milk in tea. I said, they never heard of it. I said, we drink it with lemon. So they tried it and they liked it, and they couldn't imagine drinking tea other than with milk in it. In fact, some of the restaurants in town have the tea in a milk, mixed with milk, already in the urn, like we have coffee.
Yeah.
And in fact, I went to a girl I met in London, went to a show. Her uncle was a comedian at Hanley, and she told me that they even said the reason that English drink so much tea because I've tasted their coffee, and so it's a little different.
That may be true.
Yeah.
They had been at war for 4 years by the time you got over there. What did they think about? Did they think it's ever going to end, or thank God the Yankees are here?
Yeah, the Yankees are coming, but you know they always say after the war, who's going to rule the world, the American or the British? As well, I said, that's a question of not to do with us at all. I said, just it's nothing to rule anything. I said, we just get along as allies and worked it out okay. So I met a lot of English people. I ate a lot of fish and chips wrapped in newspaper, and I queued up and I rode the bus and the pram and the tram, and I got to know all the their language and their ways. I was over to Piccadilly Circus.
In London.
Mm-hmm. And that time the big statue was boarded up. I didn't really get to see it. And I would have liked to have gone back someday, but I never did with myself or a wife.
It's still there.
Still there, yeah. Right. And I was all around, and you know, I walked through Hyde Park in London, and I went to the cinema and saw movies that we had seen here 3 or 4 years earlier, and they just got them over there under a different name. So it was quite an experience itself.
It must have been, for you, a Boston man, a Yankee over there in wartime London. Mm. Can you describe some of London or your recollections of what it was like?
Well, there's a lot of historical places there, and you know, in Trafalgar Square, and then going down through you know, the different areas around Bellingham. The head office there, not Bellingham, Birmingham or whatever they call it.
Whitehall?
Yeah, and all that area.
Yeah.
And knowing that I was right in the same place that most of the people had seen before.
Did you ever see anybody famous or any generals that you had read about?
Not really, no.
How did you know what was going on in the war while you were not necessarily just in your machine shop, but on your base?
On the base. Well, he kept us notified with the paper, the Stars and Stripes, mm-hmm. and that gave a good account of what was doing, what was going on. So that's what we kept posted on it. But we did get, in D-Day, I don't know if I'm going ahead of myself or not, but...
No, that's fine.
They went D-Day, they did transfer us to the infantry. But before we really had much time to spend in the infantry, we got transferred back to the Air Force. The war got over, and then we got shipped back to the States.
Okay, then stop right there. On the 6th of June of 1944, you, an aircraft mechanic, were taken into the infantry?
Mm.
Tell me how that happened.
Well, they needed some more bodies, some more people, you know, help and fighting. We didn't, I didn't even go into fight or anything. I just went in, they just transferred us in, but it was after D-Day, and then when they straightened things out and you know, had their surrenders or whatever they did, we went back right into the...
Did you go to France?
No, I still stayed in England.
Were you given infantry training?
We were given some basic training and all in the infantry, but
yeah.
We didn't get a chance to even go overseas. We're supposed to go to Germany, but...
What was your feeling about that, that you had been in the Air Force side of the war, and for at least a short time, you were suddenly infantry. Mm. What did you feel about that?
Well, it's a completely different feeling. You know, something was altogether different, but I didn't get in to do any shooting or battle or whatever it was. We just, I don't remember, even remember, to tell you the truth, how long it was that I was in the infantry. But I know it was quite a short time, because before we knew it, we were back in the Air Force.
Onto the same base?
And mustered out to the state, back to the States.
Okay, while you were on that base, did you meet people other than British? All the other Allied forces had their own air forces. Did you meet any
Scottish,
French or Polish or something like that?
A few Scottish, a few not so much Polish, but Scottish and Irish, Italian, because they were prisoners. We were Italian prisoners of war. In fact, they were trading bottles of whiskey for cotton cigarettes. And after we got in, we found out we weren't drinking whiskey, but it looked like whiskey was cold tea.
Well, they were fake cigarettes.
Fake cigarettes. Could have given them fake cigarettes, right? And you know, and then when they brought in some German prisoners of war, well, I was like a translator, because being Jewish, the very similar to the German language, so I could interpret something, somewhat for them that didn't know how to talk to the Germans.
Okay, so How did you run into the POWs if you were in your machine shop? Were you taken out for special services?
They brought them over, you know, and they were, of course, they were in, over in the prison section, but they could, some of them could walk around, or we could talk to them.
On your base?
Mm.
Yeah. And what transpired between you and the Germans? What was said? What were you looking for?
Oh, nothing much, just a similarity of language. We didn't hadn't had anything to do with them. We didn't eat with them, or we didn't play sports or anything like that with them. It just, we could talk to them once occasionally.
Did you do this officially?
No.
As part of an interrogation or anything like that?
No. Wasn't an official job, it just...
When you were over in England, where it rained all the time and it was foggy...
Quite a bit. Do you feel
you were properly clothed? Did you have...
You had to carry a raincoat with us at all times.
Yeah.
Because you never knew when it was. One time we were out in the field and it looked like a nice sunny day and everything was good. And it was just started to rain a little bit, and everybody took out the cigarettes to have a smoke under the tree, and they were all wet because of the rain. I had a cigarette case and I opened it up and blob of rain came right in the middle. So nobody had a smoke. At that time, most everybody was smoking.
Yeah.
And, according to what we would do there.
I think the papers, I read a little bit about you before today, and the quote is, when I was in the North, they bombed the South, and when I was in the South, they bombed the North.
Right.
Did you come upon the results of a bombing shortly after it happened or anything like
after,
that?
Yes, aftermath, right.
Tell us about that.
Well, when we, like I say, mainly in Coventry, more so than other parts of the country, that we saw the bombing afterward. And in fact, the girls that were going, seeing the soldiers that had shipped out, we came after it with a convoy, and they were all jumping all over our trucks and everything else because they were happy to see some Yanks, American soldiers at the time. So we noticed everything that was going on there. But we didn't stay very long. I guess we just came in to bought some weapons, some supplies, or whatever it was.
When you traveled all over England with your harmonica, have you any place that you can remember more than any other that you thought you might ever want to go back to?
London I liked, quite a bit. Mm-hmm. But at that time, they were, of course, things was bombed, quiet out. They hadn't had the same feelings. In fact, just used to call us Yank and on us, and we met some of them that, were friendly, but enough, but not that much. I spent 2.5 years over there, 30 months.
Were there blackouts every night?
There were blackouts, oh yeah,
every
quite a
night.
Few.
Hmm.
Well, yeah, you gotta be careful, it's a little lighting or cigarettes or whatever. Right.
Do you feel that the officers you had leading you or supervising you were well trained for their jobs and that they treated you well? Or how did they... What's your opinion of them?
Well, they seemed to be pretty good, And, there was a few that was, that was pretty good to us, and they took care of us. In fact, one of them that... One holiday was a Jewish holiday at the time, and some people, local Jewish people, invited us to their home for dinner. And of course, the people who were non-Jewish were ridiculing us because of the fact that we got invited and they didn't. It was our holiday, and the commander didn't like it. In fact, his name was McLeod, I still remember his name. And he told anybody that he caught doing that was going to be court-martialed.
Doing what?
Because they were ridiculing the fact that we were going out to somebody's house for dinner, and that they didn't include them. As well, at Christmas time, they had got invited, and they didn't seem to think that, we put up a fuss about that.
Yeah. When you went to somebody's home, were you able to bring them any food or anything like that?
Well, mostly the things that they needed, rations, that's what they were. you know, like they like chewing gum or chocolate or anything like that that they couldn't get very much of. So we used to help out once in a while.
Who were your closest friends in the service?
Oh, I don't know. There was a... Yeah, I can't think of the names too much. Benson, I know, was one fellow, Benson, and another one, Albanese. I don't remember too much of the others. There was different, few others that were... Oh, another fellow, Jack Cohen from Brooklyn, New York. In fact, he told me when he got out to look him up. And of course, when he didn't say where he lived or whatever, and I go to... One time I got to New York, I was looking up a Jack Cohen at about 500.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have done any good.
Anybody else you ever stayed in touch with over the years?
Not really, not too much. A couple of us, in fact, went AWOL one time. When we got into the infantry, we were going to get supplies, and there's two fellas, one from New York, and one of them, his name was Bloomfield or some name like that. And I didn't have any money to go, and he loaned me $20. When I got out, we got and still got an honorable discharge. They didn't put it down as a, it was only a couple of days, but we got sick of doing that infantry stuff, so they all, we took off and they come back and they, he gave me the money and I, when I got out of service, I wrote to him, I found his address and wrote to him and tell him I still remember the $20. I never got an answer, so I figured, well, either he got killed or something, and as far as today, I still owe him the $20.
Well, that's for another world.
Nah.
When you went AWOL, why did you go AWOL?
Oh, the three of us got together. We were kind of fed up with the infantry training they were giving us, and we didn't like it, so the three of us decided one of us was going to get some passes, the other one was going to get some rations, and some get some food, and we all went our separate ways. And then we met back at London in the train station, went back to camp and got reprimanded, but we didn't... He just says, you guys, our outfit is shipped out to Germany. We couldn't go because we, you know, were kids, we're young people, and we didn't get a mark against our records. Still got an honorable discharge.
About what time was that? 45, say?
I'd say around 45, around 45.
Well, you were in the infantry around D-Day, that's 44.
Yeah, 44, 45, right.
Okay. And you'd been over there, what'd you say, 2.5 years?
Yeah, I went there, let's see, December, around June, must have been around June or July, let's see, 30 months, because I was 8 months in the States, so I must have gone over there around July, August, must have been around July, I'd say, and stayed there until February 46 when we came back to the States.
So that you were still over there during the so-called Battle of the Bulge. Did you hear about that?
We knew about it, John.
What did you think? The Germans are making a breakthrough just when you thought the war was over?
Right, right.
You must have watched that one very closely.
Oh, yeah. We were kept well aware of it. We were, and we were alerted to whatever was going on.
And then you got into the spring campaigns, and it was your base very busy? There's a lot of bombing going on in the spring.
They kept busy. We were in a warehouse. We used to see them, you know, bringing in the jackets with the servicemen that get, you know, into bombings and bloodied up jackets. People would try to get the jacket, those leather jackets, the fur collars or the pilots used to wear. We tried to get them, but most of them were too messed up to get any of them.
Yeah.
We figured we used to bring them into salvage, you know, whatever.
And then the war ended. This is May of 45. And where were you?
Still there, still in England.
And
we're waiting to, you know, to get transferred.
What do you think, though, that the war is over? And
well, we were happy, of course, you know, like anybody else, it's of the surrenderings and all.
Big celebration on your base?
Yeah, they had the celebrations and all, you know, and everybody was happy, but we were just as happy to get back home.
Well, immediately your thought now is, when are we going home? Were you under the point system?
Point system, right. So many, forget how many points, 59 points or something, according to how many points you had, you get shipped home first
Yeah.
Sooner or later, whatever your medals you might have had or whatever, citations, and they got commendations or whatever.
So you had to wait till 46, is that right?
46, yeah.
Yeah.
February, I think it was February 1st or 4th or something like that, or February 6th that I actually...
What'd you do in the meantime?
I just went around camp, and I did a little more entertaining, of course, you know, the special services. I've been doing that ever since, so not entertaining, but just playing my harmonica now. It just was a hobby, and I
wish you'd brought it today.
Yeah.
In the meantime, you and the other fellas.
That's on my keychain all the time.
Before we finish, hang on a second.
No, I'm just showing you. I just got it. I keep it on my keychain. That's one of them. I got about 10 others.
Okay.
All sizes.
Did you and the other fellas, between the time the war ended and February when you got to come home, did you start to think of what you were going to do with the rest of your life?
Well, the first thing I figured is I'd go into the airport and try to follow up. I got a diploma, but I didn't get, what you say, a license. I wasn't a licensed mechanic. So what I did was I went over to the Logan Airport to try to get into, you know, in the same field, but they were have so many. At that time, it was only paying 89 cents an hour. And, of course, that was about the average for that time of season, the year. And so I finally got out of that, and I went into back into machine shop work.
Okay, let's get you home first.
Yeah.
You got the word, finally, your points are up. You're in the next bunch that's
gonna be going. Right, right.
How did you get home?
Well, they went home in a victory ship. New York, and then NYU victory, and I was sick again going home on the victory ship, which is a much smaller ship.
Mm-hmm.
And I put on a show, an NYU victory ship play. It was a show, like a talent show. But I was too sick to even figure work on it. As long as I was laying down, I was fine. As soon as I stand up, I had something to eat, I'd get sick again. So,
how long did it take you to come home in that?
About 5 or 6 days, maybe a week.
And you came into New York?
Right into New York, yeah.
Tell us about the feeling of coming into New York Harbor after all that.
Everybody jump off, of course, get off the ship, was kissing the ground and all American soil.
When you were in England, did the USO or anybody have shows for you folks?
Oh yeah, they always managed to have something going on. We could go to shows and different things that were going on. We didn't see anybody like Bob Hope or anybody that way. It was overseas there. We didn't get to see those, but they did have something going on at times to keep us busy or occupied. At that time, we didn't have, you know, much television or much of any kind, so we didn't have that to watch. So we did what we could, you know, and we managed. We used to go to clubs and have activities going for us.
Did you get those little paperback books that came out during the war?
I imagine they had some of them around.
Did you read any of those?
Somewhat, a little bit. Okay. I'm not much of a reader. In fact, that's what I'm not even belong to the library because I'm not an avid reader. I read the newspaper and things like that, but I never could concentrate or have the patience.
Can you think about your time in the military? Or let's get to where you were discharged. Where were you discharged?
I think it was Camp Kilmer, New Jersey. Mm-hmm. Mistake.
Then you took the train up to Boston and you were out.
Took the train and out, right. In fact, I adopted a little, when I was over in England, there was a little black Cocker Spaniel that adopted himself to me. Just came into the camp. They call him Blackie, like myself. He used to come with me everywhere, sleep on the end of my bed. And he was real satin smooth fur, beautiful little dog. And then when I started to leave and get in a truck to go back to the ship to go home, they said they couldn't have any animals. And he was running after, it was a heartbreaking thing, he was running after the truck to try to get to me, and finally got out of sight. And then when I got on the ship, they had three or four dogs that people had smuggled over. I felt like jumping off and getting them.
Yeah.
Because I kept them for about 2 years. He'd go with me and I fed him, you know, and I made sure he slept the end of my bed all the time. And it was real nice.
That's a sad story.
Hmm.
Can you think of any most memorable experience of your time in the service? One thing that stands out more than anything else.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It was one, particularly my cousin, first cousin, was over, also over in England. And in Northampton, we arranged two of our mothers. We couldn't communicate. We knew we both were there. We couldn't communicate with each other. So through our mothers, they found out where we were. We arranged to meet one night in Northampton at the train station. Well, it was St. Anne and St. Francis. And what happened, we didn't mention any, we just said the train station. So what happens is he goes to St. Anne, I went to St. Francis, and we waited all night. And in fact, I talked to some people there, and I met some couple of girls, and we were supposed to have a date, and when he came over to meet me, and he never showed up. He waited in the other one, the other station for me, and I never showed up. So we both went back to the same Red Cross Club, went to sleep, and next morning we figured we'd look for each other somewhere down there, and we met in the middle of the street in Northampton, England. And that was a memorable. I sent that into the Reader's Digest. I don't know if I got a hearing on it or not, but we finally met. It was quite a reunion. We hadn't seen each other for a couple of years.
I hope you told your mother.
Two of the mothers.
Yeah.
We finally met right in the middle of the street. He was walking back from the station. I was going down to the other station, and that's where we met.
That's almost a miracle, isn't it?
Yeah,
with all those people.
Right.
How about a memorable character, somebody you remember, somebody of all the time?
Yeah, this Tommy Hanley was a comedian. He was like Johnny Carson to us, or Bob Hope, or Milton Berle. He was the English comedian. His daughter, Flaming Redhead, I met her, and she took me to see him in the show, and that's when she introduced me to him. He says, "Hey, you ain't got any gum? You wanted some gum."
Was there more than anything else, was there a humorous experience that you remember?
Oh, there's several, yeah, quite a few that, I don't think I remember too many of them, but, you know, being in downtown or being in clubs or, you know, in downtown in London when, one time I missed my ride home. We used to have a truck that would pick you up, take you back to camp, and I met some girl, you know, and then the next thing you know, they all want to get married to English, to Americans, Yanks, because they used to watch American movies, and figured all of us lived like that, you know, with rich cars and homes and everything else and swimming pools, and they wanted the worst way to get married to Americans to go back to the States.
So how often did you get married?
Yeah, I made several promises, but that's all.
When you came home, did you go into the reserves, or did you join any veterans groups?
Oh yeah, I belonged to a couple of them. I belonged to VFW and the Jewish War Vets, which I'm still in, belong to.
Mm-hmm.
And I belonged to the AMVETS. Well, that was later on. I didn't join that right away. But any of the veterans groups that I would get into, you know, so you'd be recognized as something to keep busy with.
Did you ever have a reunion of the guys from the 100th Bombardment Group?
Never, no reunion. Like I mentioned, when I read the local paper, there seems to be 95% of reunions of people in the Navy. I don't get too many. I never seen too many of groups that anybody getting together from the infantry or the Air Force or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So I never had a reunion.
What was your feeling about this vague transitional period where one day you're in the service, you're a soldier, and the next day you're a civilian? How did you feel about that?
Quite a different feeling, you know. Of course, I had my mustering out pay, which was, in fact, I remember taking my kid brother and I took him to the store to buy him a pair of shoes because I had some extra money. And I felt like I was, you know, having the money. But then my main objective was what was I going to do for work, or get a job, or do something? And when I finally got in, knew I had some machine shop experience, then I went to school, because I had to support my mother and help my brother, who's younger. I went to technical. I didn't get to go to high school because when I lost my father young, I had to help out the family.
Yes.
So I went to technical trade school, which was almost the equivalent. And I learned the machine shop business from that. I gave up the idea of trying to be a follow-up airplane mechanic, engine mechanic, and I went to technical high school to learn a machine shop game, which I did, and then I worked in the Arsenal Navy Yard.
How important to you was serving in the military?
Well, I felt as though I had done my part, you know, and I whether I could have got drafted or not, I never really found out, but when I enlisted, I felt, you know, a little sense of importance, feeling of importance. Much as I could get it to.
And how do you feel it might have affected the rest of your life, other than the education you got?
Well, I felt, you know, that I was served my country and I was a veteran, and I had a feeling of, you know, that I had done something to help out the best I could, even though I didn't do any battle or anything like that. I wasn't in any, never saw any fighting or shooting or anything like that. I had a weapon, but they didn't use it that much.
What did you carry?
M14, the Grand Rifle. But we used to have a little bit of training, you know, on how to fire and firing range and all. And of course, they wouldn't let us go to camp unless, could go out and leave unless we had our piece all clean. So we'd have to do that before we were able to go out.
You were in World War II, and veterans of World War II are beginning to be much celebrated this time. It's the twilight of veterans that were in that war. What did you think about serving in that particular war as distinct from others that have come afterward?
I don't know, I didn't give it too much thought, I guess. I don't know, just, you know what, being in other branches, whatever the other branch of people were, I was as happy to see somebody else that was in the other services that, you know, come out. But I had a good feeling. It was something that I did what I could.
As to have been in World War II.
Right, in World War II, right.
Do you feel that people feel the same way about, say, the Korean War or the Vietnam War?
Well, I think it's just a later addition to the veteran services or whatever it was, missing in action, or Vietnamese or whatever, missing, you know, Korean veterans or whatever. Well, they're being recognized now as much, but although most of the veterans organizations I belong to now, like the Jewish War Vets or Veterans of Foreign Wars, or most of the people are from World War II.
They are, yeah.
Very rarely you get one from World War I unless he's a real old-timer.
How about from Korea or Vietnam or the Gulf War?
Not too much. Not too many young fellas that go into that.
Do you have any idea why that is?
I don't know. Maybe they figure there's too many older people in the organization.
You were treated well when you came home, if I understand, and went in and got a good education.
Yeah.
Do you have any feelings about how fellows were treated or the women when they came home from the wars following yours, say Korea or Vietnam?
Well, a veteran was treated well, and they, you know, they knew that he gave up his life, a job for his country. So I felt as though I was, you know, not a battle veteran, but at least I was in the service and I did my part to help out.
Did you ever take receive any veterans benefits? You said you had some trouble with your ear.
Yeah, I got the compensation for my
years.
You
did? How about hospitalization or the GI Bill or something like that?
Well, the GI Bill, I had used that when my mother's trying to buy a house when I didn't live anywhere. So I couldn't use that at the time, but I used it for her so she could get a house with my aunt next door to each other. But I didn't. When I went to buy my own house, I couldn't use it because I had already done it. So I had to go through the FHA. And I managed to get through with that all right.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Is there anything I haven't asked you today that you'd like to talk about, or is there one overriding thought that you would like to leave on this tape for people to look at years from now about your feelings of being in the military?
I don't think there's anything else. I don't think I had any regrets. I didn't have, you know, I was treated well, I was fed well, and I, you know, and back to when I was over in England in Wharton Air Base, I developed the measles, and I was in a hospital for 10 days, German measles.
And that's appropriate, yeah.
Appropriate.
Yeah.
And we had some other people there, you know, that were in it as well. And other than that, I did have a best compensation. I put a bullet in my hand through my own use, but I got compensated for that, all right. And other than that, we were just working in the hangars and doing our thing, whatever they had to do. It worked well.
Okay, Harry, would you like to play your harmonica for us?
And the little one?
Yeah.
Just give you a little bit of a tune.
I'd like that.
There's not too many tunes I can play in it, but it's just small. It's just played. If you know that song, "You Are My Sunshine."
Sure. That's why we won the war. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay.